Local leaders, top stories, the news that matters most to you. The News Drive at 5 with host Patrick Reynolds starts now.
Welcome to the News Drive at 5 here at WSIC News Talk Radio. I'm Patrick Reynolds with you on this Thursday afternoon, March the 14th, Pi Day 3.14. Thursday, March 14th, 2024, 5.06 p.m. on the East Coast. Welcome. Good to have all of you with us here on WSIC News Talk for the News Drive at 5. You just heard Dollars and Cents, hosted by Joshua Doby, the president of North Main Financial out of Cornelius. Their office is located where? You got it, North Main Street in Cornelius. Short story about Joshua Doby and North Main Financial. They became a sponsor of some events at Old Town Cornelius. Joshua is such a community partner. He said, I don't even care if I get a call on Monday morning. I just want to support the events. I don't think there's any better reason to call Joshua Doby at North Main Financial than for that statement right there. Dollars and cents right here. WSIC News Talk every Thursday, 4 p.m. As he says, that doesn't preclude a one-on-one discussion or meeting with him about your financial needs. However, it is a great financial show. Won't say advice, but maybe some information and some education about stocks, politics, anything that influences or affects finances in your pocket, big picture and small picture. Dollars and Cents, Thursdays, 4 p.m. right here, hosted by Joshua Doby and brought to you by North Main Financial. Right now for the News Drive at 5, we are looking at your top 5 at 5 news stories tonight that we are tracking. The wife of a deceased murder suspect is arrested. The Iredell-Statesville School Board submits their budget request. The banks in Cornelius have some very healthy capital. And there is a program that will help with Lake Norman rentals. And Lotta Place is targeting 2026 for reopening. 844-STUDIO-4, 844-788-3464. Get you live on air if you would like to talk about today's local news headlines. Our top story tonight in Iredell County, the wife of a murder suspect who was shot and killed by the Iredell County Sheriff's Office deputies during a standoff early Sunday morning faces numerous charges as the result of an ongoing investigation. Sheriff Darren Campbell announced the arrest of Ashley Klepfer of Oswald Amity Road in Troutman. Klepfer is the wife of Justin Strasser, who is suspected in the murders of two men at a residence in Home Drive near Mooresville on Saturday. She was arrested on Tuesday. During the investigation, Iredell County Sheriff's Office homicide investigators obtained evidence indicating Klepfer had some involvement by aiding her husband after he killed Eduardo Cordova of Mooresville and Caleb Loper of Lincolnton. A third individual was also critically injured in the shooting at the Home Drive residence. Three deputies opened fire, fatally wounding Strasser after the suspect began shooting in the direction of deputies after gas was introduced into his home in an effort to end the standoff. Investigators also determined Klepfer allowed four juveniles inside her home at Oswald Amity Road to have access to firearms during the Iredell County Sheriff's Office standoff with her husband, which began about 3 hours after the shooting and lasted about 8 hours. On Tuesday, homicide investigators obtained warrants charging Klepfer with felony accessory after the fact, four counts of misdemeanor contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and four counts of failure to secure firearms from a minor. Iredell County Sheriff's Office Aggressive Criminal Enforcement Team deputies located Klepfer and arrested her during a traffic stop in Statesville. She was in the company of a 15-year-old male juvenile who was found in possession of a loaded handgun and methamphetamine. The juvenile was also taken into custody, and a secure custody order was issued by the North Carolina Department of Juvenile Justice. Klepfer was transported to the Iredell County Detention Center, where she was charged with felony accessory after the fact. felony possession of methamphetamine, felony possession with intent to sell or deliver methamphetamine, 2 misdemeanor drug offenses, 5 counts of misdemeanor contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and 4 counts of misdemeanor fail to secure a firearm with a minor. Klepfer appeared before Magistrate Imes, who issued no bond. The Iredell Statesville School Boards of Education approved a $62.1 million local current expense budget request for fiscal year 2024-2025 earlier this week. The budget request represents a 14.25% increase over the previous budget of $54 million. School budgets are made up of local, state, federal, and other funding sources. The request includes the loss of a $10.3 million in federal ESSER money, the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Funds, ESSER. There's also a reduction in Title I funds and the Exceptional Children funding. ISS is planning to fund 21.5 teaching positions and 21 school nurses. They were paid out of ESSER funds previously. They are now out of the local budget. The cost to retain those positions next year is around $3.1 million. Superintendent Jeff James said, quote, "We put people on the ESSER dollars because if you are a good CFO and understand budgeting, you put your highest paid employees on your federal or state budgets. That way your local budget pays for your less costly employees and you end up having more dollars available to spend on other items," he added, end quote. James said that the state does not give school districts adequate funding to pay for the special services required to serve the special needs children population. "The needs are great," he said, "but the lack of funding puts ISS in a bind. Another challenge, the many unknowns with the state budget that will impact the local budget." The state's two-year biennium budget calls for a 3% salary increase, a reduction in the retirement rate from 25% to 24%, and an increase in health insurance from over $7,500 to just over $8,000. ISS built in a 4% raise for the local proposed budget based on the last 2 years of salary increases. They anticipate starting to hear some budget numbers in late April or early May. They also spoke briefly about enrollment figures or average daily memberships, which helps determine local funding. Adam Steele, who is ISS's chief financial officer, explained, quote, "We currently do not know our projected ADM, so we use our current ADM to build the budget. The district's current enrollment is about 20,500 students. Steele said that the funding request is due to the commissioners this week. He said that he hopes they will fund the full amount as it is based on their needs. He told the ISS board that the district's executive team has already started contemplating what-if discussions regarding potential local budget shortfalls. Steele said, quote, "We hope to protect jobs as much as possible. There is going to be some tough decisions that have to be made. We are discussing that as a group and talking about that now and have been talking about that. We hope to be able to make it through attrition as people retire or jobs become vacant, so we don't have to cut jobs," end quote. The local budget consists of 52% salaries and benefits, 7% utilities, 12% are charter schools, 3.2% allotted for schools for supplies and materials. We've got more local news stories coming up here on the News Drive at 5. Patrick Reynolds here with you on WSIC. We'll be back right after this.
Keep it here. We'll be back with more of the News Drive at 5 with Patrick straight ahead on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Call in now to speak with Patrick Reynolds on the News Drive at 5. The number to dial is 844-STUDIO-4. WSIC. Local starts here.
Welcome back to the News Drive at 5 here on WSIC News Talk. Patrick Reynolds with you here on this Thursday, March 14th, 2024, 5:18 p.m. Eastern Time. 844-STUDIO-4, 844-788-3464. Get you live on air in the studio over the airwaves if you got something to say about the local news and headlines. back to your local news stories tonight. Go down to Cornelius. There are billions of reasons, billions with a B, there are billions of reasons Service First Bank Shares has opened in Cornelius. We're looking at almost $1.3 billion. The FDIC says there are $1.288 billion in local deposits in Cornelius Bank branches, including two branches of Fifth Third. In all, 15 branches are there altogether. While Service First officially opens on Bailey Road next month, it joins 14 other bank branches that are chasing not just consumer deposits, but commercial loans, cash management clients, and upscale private banking clients. The top five bank branches by size of deposits are Wells Fargo with $266 million, Bank of America with $213 million, United Community with $156 million, Regions Bank at $132 million, and Fifth Third with $117 million. Truist is a fairly distant sixth with $83 million in deposits. The smallest is First Bank with $4,785 in deposits. This, according to the FDIC, and they also have a market share of 0.37%. The top five bank branches by market share are Wells Fargo, Bank of America, United Community, Regions Bank, and Fifth Third. Economists say the demographics of people moving here run towards higher incomes, many with two incomes. At the same time, the population continues to grow. There are 15 bank branches in Cornelius, but there are 14 banks because Fifth Third has two branches. More from Cornelius. An important meeting between consulting firms and town officials regarding the creation of a downtown Cornelius master plan will take place next week. Seven different consultants, all from the Metro Charlotte area, responded to a request for proposals, or an RFP, on the development of a master plan to guide development on a 137-acre segment of the town along Catawba Avenue and Main Street. After reviewing all seven, the town narrowed the field down to two. They'll meet separately with each one on March 20th prior to recommending one to the town board. Commissioner Michael Osborne said, quote, creating a downtown master plan gives us the opportunity to bring another level of detail. It will help to attract what we want and repel what we don't want. It also gives us the opportunity to include deeper dives into infrastructure and how to support our growing downtown area, end quote. The RFP acknowledged that downtown has been developed in a piecemeal fashion. Town officials are hopeful to have a final recommendation by May. More news from Cornelius. When the Symphony Park opens in April, the luxury senior living resort complex will have 100 employees and a $300,000 monthly payroll, not to mention a concierge who was a footman for Princess Diana, as well as groundkeepers, chefs, dishwashers, drivers, and a water fitness instructor. The amenities are full. They've got fine dining, a bistro, a cocktail lounge, a library, a game room, craft room, movie theater, woodworking shop, pickleball courts, billiards, and even a music room with a grand piano. If you have out-of-town guests, there are two hotel suites. Of course, it does come with a cost. Monthly rental for the one and two bedrooms apartment start at about $5,500 a month with a $500 dining allowance. Jake Palillo, the developer of Bailey's Glen, the over 55 community on Bailey Road in Cornelius, said, quote, my thought process was to develop something I would live in myself. The whole idea is like being on vacation, but you never have to pack your bags and leave. It's designed so you never have to put your coat on, end quote. His target market now includes older adults in the Peninsula, Trilogy in Denver, River Run in Davidson, and, of course, his own Bailey's Glen. A hands-on entrepreneur, he's in the day-to-day mix of 100 to 200 workers, putting the finishing touches on the $100 million project. It sits on 36 acres on Sanford Road, about a mile east of Highway 115. with more to come. He's got 240 units are virtually complete in phase one, with another 80 planned in a fourth building when 80% of the first phase is rented. After that, Palillo plans assisted living and memory care facilities on an additional 12-acre site. Out of the 240 units in the first phase, 120 are reserved. The total value at build-out is estimated to be at $175 million. The median entry point is about age 75. Roughly two-thirds are single adults, widows, and widowers. More from Cornelius. The increasing property values may be a boon for local homeowners, but renters are feeling a squeeze that is forcing them to move further and further away from the Lake Norman area. Michelle Hoverson, executive director of the Lake Norman Community Development Corporation, said the concern is most striking when it comes to public service professions like teachers, police officers, and pharmacy technicians. The Lake Norman CDC is a nonprofit that advances affordable housing opportunities for moderate income earners in northern Mecklenburg County. Hoverson said, quote, "We want people who are serving the communities to be able to live amongst the people they are serving," end quote. Housing is deemed affordable if less than 30% of the family's gross income is spent on housing costs, including rent or mortgage payments, utilities, and other fees, according to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Hoverson said that many people don't realize that making affordable housing attainable doesn't mean building more low-income housing. It means bridging the gap between average rent prices and salaries. An income of more than $84,000 a year is necessary to avoid the average rent price of a two-bedroom apartment in Huntersville, Cornelius, or Davidson. Teachers make an average of $44,000, and police officers make an average of almost $51,000, and statistics show that currently about 90% of workers in the three towns live elsewhere. Hoverson said, quote, "We want to help people move closer to where they work. It's one more car off I-77. It takes a lot of stress out of people's lives to try to get their children's activities, or if there is an emergency so they can get to work in a shorter period of time, and it leaves money for other necessities of life," end quote. The Lake Norman CDC offers three programs: home preservation, which helps people stay in their current affordable housing, senior rental relief, which helps elders living on a fixed income, and the Rental Bridge Program, which helps people working in these communities make rent so they can live nearby. Hoverson explained that the Rental Bridge Program is still relatively new, so she's working hard to spread the word that moderate income earners can apply for assistance. She has spoken before town boards and set up meetings with local police departments. The program is not emergency housing or a government voucher program, such as those offered under Section 8. The parameters for the Rental Bridge program are different. Accepted applicants must make 60 to 100% of the average median income, which is dependent on the number of people in the house, and they agree to engage in a series of financial coaching sessions. They must already live in Huntersville, Cornelius, or Davidson, or be planning to move to one of the three towns to be closer to work. The Rental Bridge program lasts for 1 year, intending to financially stabilize the applicant, and has a second-year renewal option. To qualify, applicants also can't have a debt-to-income ratio higher than 50%, and they must show proof of income. Hoverson said applicants can get pre-qualified to help them target a price range while looking at rentals. The program caps out at a $500 a month contribution, but Hoverson said most assistance is in the $300 range. Hoverson said such rental assistance programs benefit the whole community by helping attract and retain employees, and it makes a difference in the quality of policing or teaching when the worker is a part of that community. She said, quote, "I know there are people who would really be blessed by this," end quote. Currently, the program has enough funding to assist upwards of 20 to 25 applicants, depending on the amount of rental subsidy they need, but only five people are in the program. Hoverson said she believes once the effectiveness of the program is proven, the funding will grow so that more people can afford to live in Lake Norman rentals. To find out more about the Lake Norman CDC's program, visit lakenormancdc.org. In Huntersville, a lot of place, the former Huntersville Plantation that became the subject of controversy in 2021 will reopen to the public in 2026 after being developed during the winter of 2024 to 2025. Historic Lotta Plantation planned to hold a Juneteenth event in 2021, but it resulted in the site's closure as well as a name change. The house's original builder and owner, James Lotta, enslaved 34 men, women, and children on the property. Lotta Place is situated on 16 acres within the Lotta Nature Preserve. Before its closure nearly 3 years ago, the circa 1800 Living History Museum and Farm gave visitors glimpses into 19th century life in the Carolina backcountry. In the years since it closed the site, Mecklenburg County has embarked on a community-driven process, a community grounding, to start a new chapter in Lotta Place's history. A community grounding event will take place on April 6th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at David B. Wehmer Recreation and Senior Center in Huntersville. News Drive at 5 rolls on. Patrick Reynolds on WSIC.
More of the News Drive at 5 after we pay the bills on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. The News Drive at 5 continues now on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Here's your host, Patrick Reynolds.
Welcome back to the News Drive at 5 here on WSIC News Talk Radio. Patrick Reynolds with you on this Thursday, March 14th, 2024, 5:35 p.m. Eastern Time. 844-STUDIO-4, 844-788-3464. Get you live on the air here with the WSIC News Talk team. News Drive at 5, headlines and stories rolls on. We begin this segment with Davidson. The town's new social district goes into effect tomorrow. That is Friday, March the 15th. The hours that are in effect, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., 7 days a week. Davidson social districts have been under discussion and planning for more than a year. A change in North Carolina law in 2021 was initially designed to help businesses during COVID, allowing for carry-out beverages. The law was updated in 2022, and those updates led to the discussions in Davidson. In March 2023, Town Economic Development Director Kim Fleming made an initial presentation to the town board, providing extensive background on the proposal. She noted at the time that local businesses had approached the town to begin the conversation. Additionally, the topic was raised by members of the community during the meetings and public input sessions for the Davidson Small Area Plan. Fleming's March 2023 presentation was followed up with a second discussion at the April 25th, 2023 board meeting. Commissioners approved the social district in May of 2023, and while many thought the program would be up and running before summer of last year, the time between then and now has been used to finalize all the details. Local businesses have had the opportunity to opt in or out of the program. Signage has been designed and approved containers have been created. The town has established two distinct social districts. A very basic overview is that one district runs along Main Street between Depot Street and South Main Square, while the other district is at the circles at 30. Important details for people interested in using the new social districts. You still have to be 21 years old to purchase alcoholic beverages. You have to purchase the drinks at approved venues within the social district with sold here signage. You must use the specifically marked containers for carrying alcoholic beverages out of the establishment where it was purchased. You must abide by the signage, especially respecting businesses where alcoholic beverages are not permitted. You cannot carry and open alcoholic beverages between the two different social districts, and you cannot bring your own beverage. For more information about the social districts, please visit the town website. Out of Raleigh, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services is increasing its effort to prevent, treat, and help those experiencing harm related to problem gambling. Approximately 5.5% of adults and 10% of youth in North Carolina experience problems related to gambling, and an additional 7 to 20 people and their families and communities are then impacted as well. House Bill 347 allocated an additional $2 million in the state budget to help prevent, treat, and provide service related to problem gambling. With the legalization of sports betting on March the 11th, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services refocused prevention programs and education programs for treatment providers to concentrate more heavily on sports betting. Some of the initiatives to support people experiencing problem gambling include partnering with Epic Risk Management to provide prevention education on college campuses about risks associated with sports betting, funding the Gambling Research and Policy Initiative and working with ECU to better research and understand gambling behavior, attitudes, and risks, partnering with Tar Heel Athletics to promote problem gambling and responsible gaming campaign during March Madness, supporting North Carolina problem gambling programs to provide prevention education for college students at Duke University, UNC Chapel Hill, High Point University, and Chauwin University this spring, working with UNC Behavioral Health Springboard to put together learning modules for behavioral health providers on prevention of and treatment of youth problem gambling, offering youth prevention grants to middle schools, high schools, and community organizations to implement gambling, gaming, and digital media youth prevention curriculum, also partnering with Freedom House of Mecklenburg Incorporated and Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools to incorporate problem gambling awareness into the health curriculum for 14,000 seventh grade health classes. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services North Carolina Problem Gambling Program also continues to offer its services to help people maintain a healthy relationship with gambling or abstain completely. Those services include counseling and peer support. People can call the North Carolina Problem Gambling Helpline to learn more. News from Mooresville. After raising a record amount of money in supporting the area nonprofits last year, the Huntersville Happy Hour Rotary Club Luke Norman Men That Cook fundraiser returns this weekend with hopes of setting the bar even higher. Club Secretary Eileen Solomon said, quote, basically we cook for a minimum of 15 charities every year. Rotarians sometimes cook the dishes on behalf of those charities, or the charities will be invited to cook the dishes themselves, end quote. More than $23,000 was distributed to North Mecklenburg and South Iredell nonprofits as a result of last year's fundraiser. This year's installment is being held at the venues at Langtree. The Langtree owner, Chris Bakides, said, quote, Langtree is a very special venue, and as a business, we do like to support several well-deserving charities each year. Men That Cook is one event that we are particularly proud to be involved in, end quote. Guests will enjoy homemade cuisine served buffet style. A panel of expert judges will select the top three dishes in several different food categories, including barbecue, chili, casseroles, vegetarian, and desserts. Eileen Solomon said, quote, once you buy your ticket, you go around the buffet of different foods in different categories to pick what you like and put your ticket in that charity's bucket. In addition to that, we have four chefs from area restaurants judging who will rank the dishes first, second, and third in each category. What that means for each charity is they'll get the money from each admission ticket placed in their bucket, and then those selected among the top three in their category will get additional money from our event sponsors, end quote. The area groups benefiting from each event include Angels and Sparrows, Caterpillar Ministries, Cool Kids Clubhouse, East Hunterville Community Research, Feed NC, Heinz Feet Farm, Hope House, the Hopewell JROTC, Huff JROTC, Lake Norman Kiwanis, Little Smiles, Lydia's Loft, Mababu Live, North Mech Animal Rescue, Health Reach Community Clinic, and Welcome Home Veterans Military Museum. Former Huntersville Mayor John Anarella, who cooks on behalf of Lake Norman Kiwanis, said, quote, I've participated every year it's been held. We make chili every year, and we got first place in that category last year, so we're looking forward to defending our title. In Statesville, the Recreation and Parks Department will host the annual Arbor Day celebration on Saturday, April 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The event will take place at the Statesville Soccer Complex located on Simonton Road. Arbor Day holds a special significance in the city of Statesville, symbolizing not only a commitment to maintaining and enhancing its tree cover, but also celebrating the community's unity. The festivities will include free giveaways and various children's activities focusing on sustainability, green initiatives, nature conservation, environmental education, and stewardship. Attendees can look forward to inflatables, laser tag, and hot dogs grilled by the Statesville Fire and Police Department. One of the highlights of the day is the Touch a Truck event, allowing children to explore various vehicles from the city of Statesville, including fire trucks, police vehicles, recycling trucks, heavy equipment, and more. Participants can climb into cabs, try on equipment, and learn about the important roles these vehicles play in the community. I'm Patrick Reynolds. This is the News Drive at 5 WSIC Radio. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more of the News Drive at 5 with Patrick Reynolds in just a moment on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. It's the News Drive at 5 with Patrick Reynolds on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Local starts here.
Welcome back to the News Drive at 5 here on WSIC News Talk Radio. Patrick Reynolds taking you home, 5:48 p.m. Eastern Time on this Thursday, Pi Day, March the 14th, 2024. 844-STUDIO-4, 844-788-3464 are our listener lines. Back to the News Drive at 5 headlines for tonight. More from the town of Davidson. As the town is pleased to formally announce the availability of 2024 Town Day applicants for nonprofit organizations, food and beverage vendors, and performers and entertainment vendors. These applications can now be accessed through the town's official website at townofdavidson.org. The deadline for the submission of applications for consideration is Tuesday, April the 10th, 2024. This year's Town Day is scheduled to take place on Saturday, May the 4th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event will be held at the Town Green, located at 119 Main Street in Davidson. Additional details and schedule for the day will be announced at a later date. For questions or additional information about Town Day, please contact the Davidson Parks and Recreation Department. In Iredell County, Jason Lanning, Iredell County agent for North Carolina Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance Company, was recently named among the top 75 agents for 2023 by Executive Vice President and General Manager Alan Houck. Lanning was selected for this honor based on his outstanding sales and service record for multi-lines of insurance during 2023. North Carolina Farm Bureau Insurance Company has more than 850 agents across the state. The announcement was made at the annual sales convention of the Farm Bureau Insurance Companies recently at the Sheraton Hotel Four Seasons Convention Center in Greensboro. More out of Cornelius, Eric Burroff, who is the music director and president of the board of directors of the Cornelius Youth Orchestra, is on a mission to ignite a passion for orchestral music among elementary school children. The Cornelius Youth Orchestra, or the CYO's, new program, the Music Pathway Initiative, aims to reach elementary students regardless of their financial circumstances. Boroff said, quote, "Our goal is to make sure that we're providing an opportunity for elementary students to have access to instrumental music education that they might not otherwise have had," end quote. Instrumentalists from CYO visit school assemblies and put on shows for the student. Baroff explained, quote, they get to see a little and learn more about the orchestral instruments and what they sound like, end quote. Exposure to orchestral instruments typically begins in sixth grade in North Carolina, much later compared to other states. CYO aims to change this by reaching approximately 8,000 to 9,000 elementary age students in the Lake Norman area this year. CYO relies on donations to sustain its MPI program. Local businesses can sponsor a school assembly visit for $500, which covers staff fees. Current sponsors include WDAV, James Funeral Home, McDonald's in Cornelius, and a few real estate agents. However, they are still actively seeking additional sponsors. After the school assembly visit, students are invited to an instrument discovery day where they can interact and try out learning different instruments with professional assistance. These discovery days occur monthly and are entirely free for the children. Baroff said, quote, if kids want to participate in this, we don't want to make it a requirement. We go to their school. We would love to see those kids participate in our classes because then they could really get access to the educational component instead of just simply the exposure component, end quote. Students have the opportunity to enroll in the CYO program, which runs on a rolling admission basis. They offer numerous scholarships for students should they choose to progress, ensuring that finances are not a barrier. This year, according to Baroff, enrollment in the Cornelius Youth Orchestra more than doubled from last year, growing from 60 to just shy of 150 students. The CYO has also expanded its staff this season to include two woodwind faculty members, Nick Ritter and Sam Sparrow, in addition to their existing faculty in the brass and string sections. They frequently host concerts in the Lake Norman community throughout the season and are on track to far exceed the number they did last season, finishing in the 20 concert range. Baroff said, quote, as we coach them up and as we train them, we're building this community of musicians and young musicians that are learning and participating and giving back in their community, end quote. CYO had an overwhelming attendance at its first instrument discovery day in February at the Kane Center for the Arts. Children who are interested in attending the next discovery days, March 23rd and April 27th, can register for free at CorneliusYouthOrchestra.com. I actually emceed Light Up Cornelius at the Town Hall in Cornelius the last several years, and Eric and his Cornelius Youth Orchestra performed there. They were quite impressive and enjoyed introducing and speaking with Eric and the orchestra each year. More news out of Mooresville. Mothers and daughters across Lake Norman are uniting through philanthropic efforts to address local needs via the National Charity League, or the NCL. Founded in 2017 and officially chartered in April of 2020, the Lake Norman chapter of the NCL collaborates with local charities for philanthropic endeavors, from coordinating food drives to advocating for Alzheimer's awareness. The chapter has a significant impact through volunteer efforts. Jacqueline Rigaldo, president of the organization, said, quote, the organization is really focused on the mother and daughter relationship, strengthening that bond and engaging them in community philanthropy. The highly anticipated annual event, a fashion show fundraiser organized by the junior class, took place on November the 7th with a pretty in pink theme. Their silent auction, seat sales, and donations totaled over $38,000. Crazy Boutique, The Perfect Dress, and Sweet Pea Boutique donated dresses for the girls to don on the catwalk. Every junior class member graced the runway for a crowd of over 250 attendees. Local organizations also contribute items for donation baskets featured in the silent auction. The organization divided the raised funds among several charities, with the majority allocated to one organization decided by a vote. This year, they selected the Christian Mission, which works to help people break the cycle of poverty through food, clothing, and counseling support. At the Charles Mack Citizen Center in February, the junior class girls presented a physically and monetary impressive check for over $19,000 to Amy LeCount, executive director of the organization. NCL members are regular volunteers at the Christian Missions Mooresville Center, and LeCount said she loves it when they come to visit. In Iredell County, when Trevor Miller was receiving the devastating news of a cancerous tumor over 11 years ago, she had no idea her challenging journey through breast cancer would inspire a movement of compassion and support that continues to touch lives today. In November of 2012, Miller was visiting her doctor for what she thought would be a routine appointment. However, it was here that her doctor found a cancerous tumor. Miller was told she had breast cancer. Like many facing a life-altering illness, Miller sought the compassion and support of others who had been in this journey before. However, she was discouraged to discover the lack of support groups in the community that fit her needs. Miller said, quote, "I couldn't really find any support groups of others who had gone through the same thing. If I did find one, it was really early in the morning, or at times I couldn't attend. Rather than accept this as a setback, Miller saw it as an opportunity to make a difference. After speaking to the other women, Miller was excited to learn they were just as eager to connect as she would. She was. Now Miller has been cancer-free for more than 10 years, but by going through the journey herself, she remembers things that she brought her comfort zone that she can now provide for others. For example, Divas Fighting Like Girls regularly visits Iredell Infusion Care to bring snacks and offer support to patients receiving chemotherapy. If you ever attend a Divas Fighting Like Girls meeting, you will undoubtedly feel encouraged to fight. Reflecting on her own journey, Miller says it starts with your mentality. Miller said, if you don't get this under control mentally, by the rest of your body follows suit. When I originally started my journey, I said I wasn't taking chemotherapy, but my husband told me, no, you're going to do whatever you need to do to live. At that point, I knew I needed to do what I had to do to fight this battle. Miller had a very inspiring story. Well, coming up after the news drive at 5, as always right here weekdays, is the scoreboard with Joe Berg producing the news drive at 5. So, Joe, what do you got teed up for the audience on the scoreboard tonight? A little bit of hoop, I'm assuming?
Well, surprisingly, we have sports, and more sports today. And yes, a lot of hoop.
Yeah, when the calendar says March, I imagine we're talking some college basketball here.
That's because it's madness out there, Patrick. It's madness.
Yeah, it's almost like a good marketing and branding tool for college hoop right there. That's college basketball fans, they can get their fill. They can get filled up, fill their cup with the scoreboard tonight.
They absolutely can. ACC tournament going on, other tournaments going on. We are just days away from Selection Sunday.
Yeah. Big deal.
It's a great time of the year.
We were following the ACC tournament as I was down in the Cornelius studio yesterday. I was able to jump in on the news drive, give a little ACC update. And I know the college football junkies, diehards, they're ready for the scoreboard tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Going to be a big show. College basketball, full throttle, full swing on the scoreboard coming up in just a few moments. Don't touch that dial. Joe Bird and the scoreboard is coming up. College Hoop Special. This has been Patrick Reynolds for the News Drive at 5 here on WSIC. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Mooresville, North Charlotte.